Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today for our very first live stream event on turning your passion into your career.
We are your co-hosts today, Lucy and Ray, for this live stream. For those of you who don't know about us yet, we are the hosts of a podcast called The Impact Project, where we talk to inspiring people who are building their career around making a positive impact on people and the planet, and also business leaders in the sustainability and impact investing space.
We're also proud ISEC alumni and really appreciate DLC for inviting us back to host this event. And so today we're joined by a very special guest, John Treadgold.
John is the host of the Good Future podcast, one of the greatest podcasts about the business of sustainability.
So to introduce our guest, John, a little more, he's had a rather unconventional background going from UNSW to working in communications in NAB to the World Bank, the UN, and now as the host of the Good Future podcast. So John, we're super grateful to have you here with us today. And we thought we'd start by getting you to tell us a little bit about your personal journey so far.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you for that introduction. Love it. And I certainly have had, I've had my background described as unconventional. That's a polite way to put it. Other people have described it other ways. But look, really appreciate being invited on. You guys are doing well with your podcast. And of course, my podcast, Good Future, has been a big part of my journey in the last sort of 2 to 3 years. And it's really helped me get to the core of what I'm passionate about and what I want my career and my work to be about in the future, and obviously really powerful in building a network. But rolling back a bit to how I got to that point, and you know, a lot of the audience today are university students, so I studied at the University of Canberra, studied economics quite a while ago now, and look, at that stage I really enjoyed the intellectual challenge of business. And when I first studied business administration, but then when I did an economics course, it really spoke to me and it made a lot of sense, a lot more than accounting. I shifted away from accounting to focus on economics. And at the same time, I started to have this feeling, and it really was really powerful by the time I'd finished my degree, that economics was a really powerful force, but it wasn't valuing environmental resources very well. It was all about valuing all sorts of things, but it was meaning that we were, you know, pollution didn't have a price. Oceans were being polluted. And there were solutions, but politics and other reasons were kind of blocking it. So from there, my career was in the government, federal department, federal finance department in Canberra, as well as the environment department. I then moved to Sydney and started working for the state government. And then I moved into financial services. And along the whole way, I sort of had this itch that business wasn't in line with our ecosystem, that economics and our ecosystem weren't operating together. And that always kind of bugged me. And that was, I always saw that as why we had, you know, environmentalists and we had people protesting, because these two things that should be working together weren't working together. And that led me to sort of want to shift my career. I was feeling a bit itchy, kind of an early midlife crisis. And so I went back to university. So I decided to study a master's degree. I had done lots of travel through my times working. I'd sort of, you know, managed to fit in some great trips abroad in between different roles. And I'd worked on social development projects. I'd always been interested in aid. In Canberra, I had friends working at Department of Foreign Affairs and always found it really interesting. So when I decided to do a master's, I did international relations and international law at UNSW. Really great course. You know, some of the subjects, I would be the only Australian in the room. Everybody was from all over the world and I learned so much from that. It was a really great, you know, conversational type structure. So that was really great. And at the end of that, I had the opportunity to do an internship. And I managed to get a placement at the UN Global Compact in New York. And for anybody that doesn't know about the UN Global Compact, it's the part of the UN that partners, that is the linkage with the private sector. So they have, you know, a compact is an agreement and companies sign up to this voluntary agreement. So it's an interesting way that that private companies have an interaction with the UN. And it was there that I discovered this world, this concept of impact investing and sustainable investment. And it was sort of a light bulb moment for me. So when I got back to Sydney, I was working for a big fund manager, but you know, my real passion became this world of sustainable investment. And as I started to investigate it, I found a community of people that were working hard, and it really just opened my eyes. I was like, finally, I've found my people. And I was really fortunate at how warm and welcoming they were. People met me for coffees and answered all my really naive questions and, you know, really rich sort of opportunity. And, you know, that was only sort of 3 or 4 years ago, and it's already shifted where, you know, now I have other people wanting to take the same journey and coming to me and asking me questions. But at that time, I had another friend who had a podcast, and they said, you really need to, you know, all these conversations you're having, they're so exciting. You should start a podcast. And so I did. So that gave birth to the Good Future podcast. And yeah, as you said, it's about the business of sustainability. I interview impact investors, which is more the private market side, public equity markets investors, but also people who are running social enterprises, people who are in organizations that are trying to produce frameworks for measuring impact. Not sure how many of your listeners are sort of more focused on studying finance and that kind of thing. But in finance, they're very good at measuring profit, measuring revenue. But what they're terrible at measuring is their social and environmental impact. So that's really the next evolution of finance, I feel. And that's sort of the field I'm working in. And that's where I'm at today. So look, I'll stop there.
Wow. Thank you, John, for sharing with us. That sounds like such an amazing story. And it's incredible that you've got to work at so many different organizations. And we'd love to explore a little bit more with you in a bit. But before we go into it, just out of curiosity, out of all the organizations that you've worked in, what has been the most, I guess, memorable experience so far?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sort of go off track, but I think there's an interesting element there where I've had, as you said, an unconventional career. Some people studied university, they got a grad position, and they worked for one organization for 10 years. And that's the complete opposite of what I've done. I've worked, you know, in full-time roles, I've worked part-time, I've worked as a consultant, worked as a contractor, all different formats. And that's an interesting process. You learn to work with different sort of managers, but you learn to build relationships really quickly and get to know different organizations. So I think that if I can offer people, you know, an insight, it's that there are lots of different ways to work. You know, an artist works very differently to someone who works in a full-time role in an office, and even then a consultant who's in lots of different offices, very different ways to work. So I just want to sort of open people's eyes to that. But in terms of memorable things I've done, I mean, the internship at the UN in New York was pretty amazing. I was fortunate that the UN General Assembly was sitting while I was there. So it was exciting enough to spend a couple of months in New York, but also to be able to go into the inner sanctum, into the UN General Assembly. I mean, First Avenue and Second Avenue were closed off to traffic. It was, you know, amazing security. There were 180 world leaders, and we had roles of sort of ushering people through, and we were able to go to the General Assembly and see the Australians speaking. So it was really interesting. And while that was exciting, I sort of want to temper that and bring a bit more reality to it and say, people sort of say, what was it like working there? And very exciting. You're working with some really interesting people, and they're solving, you know, working on really important issues. But then again, you do end up finding yourself sitting at a desk, tapping away on a computer, working on research reports. And it did remind me a lot of working for just another government department. So everything has a balance, but that was exciting. So yeah, those sorts of opportunities are really valuable. I think for your listeners out there, you know, jump at those opportunities because they don't come again. And it's really great when you're young and naive and you can just ask lots of questions and just be really open to these experiences. It's pretty great. But then, you know, my sort of work at the moment is as a strategy and communications consultant for sustainable investors. And I am a hopeless generalist. I'm interested in everything. So it's great that I get to work with lots of different people and solve problems. So I'm asking them lots of questions and working out different ways to communicate and relate to them, lots of different types of people. So yeah, I really enjoy that.
That's really awesome. And I guess from going from studying accounting at Canberra to being in the UN in New York in this field of communications, and now I guess hosting your own podcast and blog, one thing that we're really curious about is how did you, I guess, go about really aligning your passions with your career? And I guess looking back, what were some of the steps that really helped along the way?
Yeah, look, I think this word passion is a difficult one. I think people assume that, you know, you have to be a starving artist to be able to pursue your passion, that you can't get rewarded for it. And I think that there has to be, you know, you sort of have to temper it, and that you have to realize that anything new comes with hard work. So you always have to work hard. But I do think that, and it's the old one where if you find something you love, you won't work a day in your life. And now, again, that's probably going a bit far, because I think you still have to work hard. But for me, you know, as I was building my, when I started the podcast and when I was building my consulting career, I mean, I was coming into this industry with no experience and trying to, you know, knock on doors and say, you know, do you want to hire me? And that's a challenge, right? And so I had to skill up really quickly. I started a podcast, which doesn't earn revenue. It just costs you money and time. And I was doing, you know, research day in, day out. And that was more than full-time work, and obviously not getting paid for any of it. So I was clearly passionate about it. And to, you know, that's work that some people get paid for. So to me, my goal was to keep doing what I'm doing, but to get paid for it. And, you know, I think that's where I find that element of passion. I mean, it's just that's the motivation that keeps me going, is that I really enjoy doing it and I know exactly what I want. And some people know what they want when they're studying university and they roll straight into the job and they do really well. For me, it took a long time to work out what I want. And I think once you work that out, you can then follow these guides that people explain about, you know, that if you know what you want, then you just push hard and you do everything you can to get it. But you've got to work out what you want. And I've done that. And so I did the hard yards. I really put my head down. And it was tough there. There was lots of doubt about whether I was doing the right thing. My parents had no idea what I was doing. They could never quite understand my approach. When are you going to get a proper job? They still say that. And, you know, it was just a matter of knowing within me that this was the stuff I was really interested in and passionate about. You know, obviously sustainability and sustainable investment is a really powerful trend right now. But when I got into this stuff 5 years ago, it was, you know, it wasn't really as much of a sort of an issue. There were questions about whether you could really make a career in the industry. So in that way, it was a leap of faith. So I just think, you know, especially, and I'm a lot older than you guys, but if you're in your early 20s, take some risks, go for it. There's nothing to lose.
Yeah, I guess one of the benefits of trying different things is, and as you mentioned, you've got to meet many different people, and I'm sure that you've built up an amazing network and have met many different amazing people. So in your opinion, how has network and mentors has contributed to getting to where you are today?
Yeah, networks and mentors have been huge. Without them, I wouldn't be here. And that really comes back to relationship building, which I think is one of the most important things you can do for your career. I think that it's something you don't get taught at university. You know, if your parents are sort of switched on, that they will embedded in you. But I think it's so important. For me, I was really shy when I was young, and it wasn't until I sort of had been in my career for 5 or 10 years that I sort of shook that off and realized, you know, what am I worried about, and sort of came out of my shell a bit more and brought my full self to work and just stopped worried about what people think and just said, you know, I was much more myself. And that's when I started to be able to look people in the eye and ask them questions and get to know them on a personal level. And that then created much better interactions at work. And I did a lot better in everything I did. I was happier. I'd make more friends. And so when I got back from the UN and started with the podcast and started reaching out to people, I was just really honest and sincere, you know, breaking down that ego and just saying, I want to learn from you. I'm really passionate about what you're doing. I have a lot of respect for you. And if you're honest, you look someone in the eye and say that, I think 9 times out of 10, they'll say, of course, you know, I can give you half an hour and have a chat. You know, I think an important element there is to make sure you bring them value. Make sure you don't give them homework. Don't even say to them, what can I do for you, thinking you'll do something, because they're very busy and that's just another thing they have to do. So instead, do your homework, you know, look at people you respect and you know, offer them something without expecting anything in return. That's been a really powerful thing for me. I think that's really valuable. It gets you doing the work. And yeah, you know, I think that that's recognized as, you know, that's the key element. It's not, I've been told, I think a great advice was, it's not the answers you give, it's the questions you ask that you're judged on. And I think that's really important. And so, you know, if you're thinking about a job interview, rather than worrying about what they're going to ask you, focus on the questions you're going to ask them, because I think they will find this is important. That's networking. I love networking. I get a lot of energy from it. That's why I love the podcast. I start talking faster. My heart starts racing. I love it. And so networking, I mean, I think it's always petrifying when you walk into a conference and there's lots of little groups of three or four people and you've got to try and start conversations. It's really hard. It's a great skill to develop. And mentors. Mentors, I've had some great ones. I've had some really good managers that have been mentors. And what I would give people is if there is someone that you want to be your mentor, never use the word mentor. Because a mentor is basically an unpaid consultant. So if you say mentor, they just think more work. So I don't use that word anymore until, you know, the relationship's gone further. I just try and have it as, you know, can we work together? Can I help you out? You know, can I sort of, even if you frame it as I'll be an intern, I think that's a better value add than a mentor, which is a burden for them. But certainly, look, I've got many and, you know, I've got mentors that, you know, I was chasing their coattails for so long and felt that I was a burden, but I was still like, oh, you know, they've done so many great things. It's that person where I say, I want to be like you. I've been in jobs where I don't want my boss's job. I don't want to be like my boss and their jobs I don't do well in. But when I really respect my boss and I'm like, that's who I want to be like, then I do really well. So, you know, I've had probably my best mentor is someone that, you know, I learned a lot from, but the relationship has evolved to the point where we now work together in a way. You know, I have helped them to, you know, I've mentioned their name in business dealings and I've managed to get them work. And that's, you know, it was a really proud moment of sort of becoming a peer and evolving my career in that way. So, and I think that takes confidence in yourself, but this is all personal development elements that don't really have anything to do with what you study at university or what your title is. It's more what type of person you are and whether you can look someone in the eyes when you ask them questions and commit in that way. And that's what starting my podcast has sort of taught me and what I've learned, and it's been really valuable.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective, because I think especially for a lot of university students out there, it's that we all want to network and we know that it's important, but I think something that so many of us struggle with is figuring out how to actually go about doing it in a way that's mutually beneficial. And that is, I guess, effective and allows them to connect with the people who they really admire and look up to. So I think that's some really amazing advice there. And I'm really curious, is there, say, a specific networking moment or, say, a person that you've reached out to that has been particularly memorable, say, perhaps in the way they've responded to you or the way that, say, the relationship has developed?
Well, I mean, rather than sort of an individual element like that, I think that there was there were some events that I can sort of compare. So there's an event, a conference called the Impact Investment Summit. It's on every year. Unfortunately, it's not on this year for obvious reasons. And when, you know, that summit was obviously something I really wanted to be involved in when I first discovered this field of impact investing. And so I got to know the organizers there, and I said, you know, is there anything I can help you with just to be involved in the event? And they said, oh, look, you know, you're good at communications. Why don't you run our Twitter feed? Great. You know, that'll mean I'll focus all day. I'll listen to everything. I'll do your Twitter feed. Great. Now I turned up and I was so nervous. I can still remember my entire body was tense all day. I've never been so exhausted. I had a headache because I really wanted to network. I really wanted to talk to all these people, but I just felt such an imposter. I felt like I didn't know anything and that I was constantly, you know, rifle through the little bits of snatches that I knew and the questions that I'd tried to remember, and it was exhausting. I can still just remember the feeling, you know, my back ached, had a headache. It was this full body exhaustion. And then I looked around and there are people with smiles and they've got their drink and they're professionals in their suits and they look so calm and, control of their careers. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm trying to write these smart and funny tweets all day. Exhausting, but an amazing experience. I did meet lots of people. I made a fool of myself plenty of times, but you know, it felt great when I got home and flopped down onto the floor, you know, that I'd done it, because I could have pulled out, but I didn't. Now I then went back the next year, and it was, you know, I'd gone up a level. You know, I had more experience. I'd spoken to a lot of different people, and I walked into that room, and then I wouldn't say I was sort of on a level. I was still nervous, but well, no, actually. So this is where the networking, and this is where the value of that, of having put myself through that the first year, it was really valuable, is that in that intervening year, I decided to start the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I really want to make a splash with my first episodes. And the conference was coming up in a couple of months. So I contacted them and I'd got to know them, and they trusted me because I'd worked with them the year before. And I said, look, I'm launching this podcast. Can I interview some of your guests? And they were more than happy. They were like, that's great promotion for us. So I was able to interview two of their keynote speakers, you know, one from the Global Impact Investment Network in the US and the other, the CEO of Impact Investment Group. And so that was an amazing launch pad for my podcast. It was a deadline, which is really important to get it finished. And so, you know, it really pushed me to have a date to finish it. You know, then I was at the event and I knew a couple of the lead speakers, which was, you know, a really great sort of networking anchor. But then it was the third year when I went and I knew a lot of the speakers, so I'd interviewed them all. People would come to me and they would say, oh, you're John, that's, you know, really enjoying the podcast, and we'd discuss things. There were lots of issues that I'd sort of battled with through the year, and I could ask people really smart and intelligent questions, and we could have conversations. And so for me, that was sort of a 1-3 year evolution of sort of my skill set. And I think it was probably sped up a lot because of the podcast, and that if that was a general sort of career progression, that might take 10 years. So in that way, yeah, you know, that was for me a real, it really forced me to get out of my shell. And yeah, it was pretty powerful. So networking's great. And I think, don't even think of it as networking. I often think it's a bit icky. Just think of it as building relationships. It's like friendships. You know, if you go to the pub, it's the same thing as going to a conference. You're trying to look people in the eye and make a personal connection. And you got to be honest. You got to be your true self, because otherwise people will see straight through it and won't trust you. So
I think that's very powerful. Yeah, very powerful story. And I think that's very relatable story as well. I guess every one of have those experiences going to those networking events and don't really know how to talk to people. But I think one of my key takeaway from your story was that communication can be learned. It's not something that like everyone has to have the talent of. So I really encourage everyone to just go out there and just talk to many different people and try to have a genuine conversation with different people. And I guess that's one of our key learnings from starting our podcast as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think another topic that we'd like to discuss with you is impact investing or sustainability, which you have many experience is working in. I guess from your experience and the people that you've connected with both through your career and the podcast, what's the importance of companies being driven by, I guess, purpose rather than just profit?
Yeah, look, right now is a really exciting time. I think that your audience, you said a lot of them are sort of graduating at the moment. And I think, look, my heart goes out to you guys. It's a really tough time to be graduating with a global pandemic shutting the world down. I think it's tough. But I think that there can be optimism in the fact that the world of business is changing unlike it ever has before. You know, the Industrial Revolution, early 1900s, that changed the world. Industrialization, we moved from the farms to cities. And now we have financialization and we have digitization, and it's changing the world. We're moving from an era of shareholder capitalism, stakeholder capitalism. Now, I'll explain that because that sort of, you know, buzzword sort of terminology that's been buzzing around a lot at the moment. But in the past, companies really only worried about their shareholders. They did everything they could to increase profit for their shareholders. And of course, a company has people are impacted by a company far more broadly than just the people who own shares. They have stakeholders that are much broader. You have the people who work for them, who might not have shares, but they certainly work in the company. You have the people that work in the communities, you know, surrounding a plant. You then also have broader, you know, members of a community who are impacted by the political influence that companies have. And so now there is this shift, this coalescing and movement, which, you know, it captures impact investing, sustainable investing. The whole movement is sort of captured by this, where it's an element of companies kind of being forced to realize and to engage with the fact that they need to make decisions for all of their stakeholders. Now, you know, this is kind of what got me interested, and this is the disconnect that I recognized when I studied economics so long ago, was that surely it's good for business to focus on all of your stakeholders. You know, eventually, if you treat, you know, because if you don't respect your community, then that's going to be bad for business down the line. But as we saw with the global financial crisis, we see it with, you know, investments in fossil fuels, that businesses and investors are often driven by these short-term motivations. And most often, this is a striving to increase shareholder value. And so that's shifting. I think it's been a long road since the global financial crisis, but I think that that's been a key driver here. I think the evolution of sort of young people's engagement with the world and realizing they do have power is powerful there. But also, I think it's been caused somewhat by our capitalist system, but also the capitalist system is part of the solution because it's the companies that are doing the best things, that are investing in renewable energy, that are, you know, companies like Patagonia that are talking about, you know, buy less of our jackets, just buy one good one. You know, these types of companies are stealing market share. Everlane, you know, similar kind of roles, Adidas and their linkages with Parley for the Sea. These companies are not, it's not a cost to them. It's actually gaining them more market share. So it's a benefit. And the market's recognizing that. And they're saying, oh, hang on, like this is the shift. We need to get on board with this. And so, you know, we've seen the International Energy Agency that solar power is the cheapest electricity that's ever been produced.
Wow.
Right? Renewables have got so cheap now, and we've never produced such cheap electricity. And of course, that is at a time when fossil fuel power production still doesn't have to pay for pollution. So you can imagine how that delta will widen once fossil fuel power production has to pay for the emissions they release. So, you know, all of these forces are coming together, and I think 10, 20 years are going to be really exciting. I mean, we have the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, which run to 2030. You know, that's the UN for 2015 to 2030. That's becoming a driving force for finance. We have net zero carbon emissions, which a lot of them are striving to 2050. And, you know, there's a lot of people are going to lose jobs in coal mining, but I think there's going to be so many more jobs in renewable energy and sustainable finance and in measuring impact. So it's a really exciting time. And yeah, I think that, you know, this is, I felt that I, you know, you talked about passion earlier. And I engaged with this field because I was passionate about it when it wasn't clear whether there was a career driver. But now, you know, I think that that's a really fulfilling thing to do, is to find that, you know, be a contrarian, find that thing in the world right now that might not be the most popular, but you think will be huge in the future. You know, look for that thing and just go for it. Take a punt, take some risk, especially in your 20s. There's no downside to that. But again, you know, sustainability is a pretty easy winner. Jump on board, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point you raise, because it's so easy to just assume that, you know, businesses can't both be profitable and sustainable and do good things at the same time. And I think some of these examples you raise, like Adidas with Parley, are just such good examples of really businesses out there that are doing good, but also benefiting their shareholders at the same time. And I think that's a really powerful message. So we've actually seen quite a few questions come through on Slido. So Thanks for everyone who's been posting those. We'll get around to them at the end of the live stream. So hopefully we'll be able to get through all of them. But thanks, guys, for posting those questions. So we would really love to, I guess, hear about your perspective on what, I guess, individuals out there who are, say, particularly university students entering the, I guess, the business world or about to enter the business world, what can they do to inspire, drive, and really support the change that we'd like to see outside of, I guess, just, you know, the whole profit-centric and old-world mindset that's driven businesses for so long?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's, I think the core of what I do is trying to empower to realize that they do have power. You know, I talk about impact investing with people and they say, oh, you know, that's not for me. I don't have any money to invest. But we all have a superannuation fund. So we're all investors. And, you know, I just would question everybody out there of, you know, how long did you spend or have you spent any time at all investigating who your super fund is? I think a lot of us probably spend far more time shopping for that last pair of shoes we bought than we have on our superannuation fund. But, you know, it's difficult to sort of gauge this, but, you know, there are reports that your choice of super is far more valuable than, you know, going to a climate day protest. That is one single thing that you can do to, just because you just don't know what your super is invested in. You could be supporting companies that really aren't aligned with your values and that don't represent that future you see. But there are so many options right now. And I work with a lot of the super funds and talk to them. And you know, there are so many exciting super funds with really interesting young teams that are doing some great stuff. And you know, they've got lots of information about the companies they invest in and why they're investing in them, the mission they're driven by. And they're reporting more sort of impact data than ever before. And this is the shift that's really happening, is that companies, investors that don't report who they're invested in and how they measure their impacts, you know, these investors are they're the ones that are losing flows. And we've seen that with ESG investing outperforming most other mainstream funds amid COVID and after the bushfires in Australia. So, yeah. You know, I mean, look, that's just one small way people can have an impact. And, you know, the career you choose is a big one, how you choose to get around the world, just the way you live your life. I won't sort of go into that, but yeah, just that element of, you know, don't give up, don't feel powerless. You do have a lot of power and just go for it.
Amazing. Yeah, we've got some more questions and we will actually be soon going into our Q&A session. It has been great, amazing talking to you, John. Before, I guess, we jump into the Q&A, we would like to wrap up this part of the live stream with some recommendations that you'd like to share with our listeners. For example, are there any books or other resources out there that you think will be particularly helpful?
Books. Yeah, look, Donut Economics by Kate Raworth is a great book. I started reading that. Look, she's a world-leading economist. I'm nothing like her, but just her journey of being sort of disillusioned with traditional economics is really interesting. And she's, you know, created a new model that really aligns economics and ecology. So check out Donut Economics. And yeah, look, I think that people can sort of, you can read too much nonfiction, it can get a little bit boring. But I think fiction, you know, narrative stories can be really interesting, you know, can have just as much impact and shape your mindset. And one of my favorite books that's quite old now, but it's still really relevant, is called Bliss. It's by Peter Carey. And it's sort of got two central characters, one being a marketing guy and the other being a hippie chick from Byron. And they're, you know, their paths cross and they have this huge impact on each other. But it opens with him thinking that he's dead. He thinks he's in hell and that his family are sort of devils that are there to taunt him. Anyway, it's a bit odd. It's a really good book. He's won the Man Booker Prize a couple of times. So he's a great author. Yeah. So look, those are great. And you know, podcasts are really an amazing resource. We all hear that everybody's got a short attention span, but suddenly, you know, podcasts that run for an hour are more popular than ever. So I just think that we don't have to lose hope and there's some great content out there.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate sharing those amazing resources and recommendations. So hopefully our listeners get a a lot out of them. And look, once again, thanks so much, John, for joining us today. We really appreciate your time and your insights, and hopefully, you know, the attendees got a lot out of it. I know I did. And so, you know, just thank you so much. I guess we can't show how grateful we are. And, you know, best of luck with the podcast.
Pleasure. Doing well, guys. And all the best.
Thanks, John.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you learned something new and enjoyed the episode as much as we did. While you're here, feel free to follow us on social media at our Instagram account, The Impact Project.
The Impact Project podcast and the persons involved may have positions in the companies mentioned. This is general advice only. Please speak to a financial professional to understand how they pertain to your individual situation.